My name is Tim Rutherford Johnson, and I welcome you to the podcast Neue Musik Leben. This podcast is usually presented by Irene Kurka, but to celebrate its fourth anniversary today, we are turning the tables, and I will be the host, and Irene will be answering questions from me about her life in new music. In this podcast, we talk about topics around new and contemporary music. We share behind the scenes insider knowledge, and we want to bring you closer to the human beings of the new music world. Irene has studied classical singing, but she loves to sing music from the medieval period right through to contemporary and experimental music. If you would like to know more about her, please visit her website at www.irenekurka.de, and you can find this address in the show notes. Neue Musik Leben is a cooperation with the journal Neue Musik Zeitung, and more details about that can also be found in the notes. Irene, welcome to your podcast. How does it feel to be on the other side of the microphone?
I'm very pleased. I feel so honored and happy to just have listened to you. And well, thank you very much for doing this. And yes, I'm excited to answer questions about me in this anniversary episode about myself, because so far in the English episodes, I only interviewed other great colleagues. And well, I guess now it's my part. And thank you for doing this.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. So I should say I am in West Sussex in the south of England. We're doing this over Zoom. Where are you today?
I'm in Düsseldorf in Germany.
Excellent. So we're turning the tables. And so I wanted to ask you some of the questions that you usually ask your guests. And to begin with, I think a very common one that you ask lots of people: how did you find your way into new and experimental music?
Actually, it started kind of early, because I was in a choir where we already sang something like Bartok or Hindemith, which nowadays it's not so modern, but back then it was. And then I was at a very good gymnasium or music high school. And I think it was like the sixth grade, I was introduced to Stockhausen Gesang der Jünglinge and to Berio Sequenza, because we had a very curious or open teacher. And I also got introduced to John Cage, the prepared piano, and 4:33. And this all excited me. And I must admit, back then it was a mixture of excitement, but also, oh my God, this is really weird. But sometimes the weird things draw me closer. And even though I think we listened to Kathy Barbarian's version of the Sequenza, I thought like, oh my God, she's hurting her voice. But at the same time, I had this little voice in my head that said, Irene, you will sing the Barbarian Sequenza one day. And I guess this is how it started. Then I also studied at the United States, at Dallas, Texas, and then Vancouver, Canada. And we had there a new music ensemble. We all were supposed to go there. But most, especially of my singing students, colleagues, they just signed up, but they never showed up. I was the only one who actually showed up. And then I started doing new music. I had no clue. And in the beginning, it was very difficult for me. It took me forever to learn a piece. But then I got better and better. And I was doing those things. And the weird thing was, we had master students for composition. They wrote music for singers, but there was no singers who wanted to sing this music, even though it was not that experimental, I must say, now looking back. And so I got to do all this music. And they all said, well, there's this crazy German singer, she can do this. And as more as I did it, as better I got. And the interesting thing was then too, I mean, Texas is a big state, and all the other universities, like in Fort Worth, Austin, Waco, and so on, Denton, they had the same problem. And suddenly they all showed up to me and said, like, can you sing our music? We have a recital to do. And so I was singing this kind of music. Then after my studies, I returned to the area of Nuremberg where I grew up. And there's a big, the Bavarian Radio, Bayerischer Rundfunk, they also have a program that is called Concerto Bavarese. And they still actually do promote music that is really from this region. And so I got into that scene, and I also got to record a lot for the radio station in Bavaria. And this is how it all continued, learning by doing. And then I got to Bonn, which is close to Düsseldorf. Mm-hmm. And then by time the music got more and more experimental and funky and avant-garde. So I was always developing. It was, for me, it was a learning by doing, because back then I didn't know any teacher I could have gone to. I was just doing it, but it was a great experience. And I still love being in the scene because I like the different sounds. I like the different experiences. And I guess I'm just a very curious person. And this is where I find joy.
Absolutely. I think quite a few people in new music have a similar experience, that you realize that no one else is doing this. So if I do it, I have the opportunity to do a lot of it. I think I found that when I was a student writing about music, that, you know, I wanted to write about Fernyhough and John Adams and people, and no one else was doing that. So I thought, right, I can make this can be my little world. During this period when you were singing and you were studying a lot of new music, were you also singing classical and historical repertory as well?
Yes, I basically did a very normal voice study. I did opera, I did oratorio, I did art song. It was very, very classical. And it was this one course, was just one course on the side, maybe 2 hours a week. And but I was curious enough to do it. And then also then I got to know composers. But I'm a classical trained singer. I'm also happy with, because I think I really know my voice very well. And I and for me, doing all those different techniques nowadays, apart from just singing beautifully, it's just that I grown my possibilities or what I can do with my voice. And for me, that's really, really exciting. And I often find that even when I do things where I thought, oh my God, this is maybe stressing my voice, that when I do it in the right way and I listen to my body, that it feels good. Then when I sing whatever, a Handel or a Mozart aria, they often even feel better. So I feel that all these different things can come together. And I like having this solid bass also. And as you mentioned, then at some point when I did all the solo repertory, then I also got curious into the medieval music. And I even did another master's in medieval music. And that also felt so good to get the bass and then whatever, build my tree up upon it, even though maybe my contemporary music is up there with the branches and the leaves. But yeah. I like being the whole thing.
And how do you approach learning a contemporary piece as opposed to a historical one? Is there a different way that you go about it, or is it sort of the same process?
Well, it depends also on the piece. I mean, if the interesting thing is with the medieval music, there are maybe more polarities, because in medieval music, you basically, if at all, you only have the melody. And so everything, in a way, you have to make up. So you're very, very creative. If I would ever take a Mozart or a Handel aria, there's everything set. There is a timing. There are bars. So there I have more, and I can jump into this. And when I learn contemporary music, it really depends on the piece. There are pieces I can kind of read like a Mozart aria because everything is obvious or maybe at a difficulty that I can grab it at the first sight. But there are also pieces where maybe there's so many layers, I cannot do it all at once. So I have to split it down and say, okay, whatever. I focus first on the notes and then on the rhythm and then on this, and then I put everything together. And I also find that there are pieces I'm actually forced to find new strategies because there are so many people that require something new from me. And so I have to figure it out. But that is also something I find exciting. I mean, it always depends on the whole workload, because if there's too much work, then it can be stressing. But it's also fun that I don't always know at the beginning how I will go about it or how I split it down to actually get it into my body, in my voice, in my head, that I can then really make music with it.
Yeah, I see. Is there a certain kind of music though that you enjoy singing the most? Do you prefer ones where there's quite a big challenge where you have to really work things out, or do you like ones where you can jump in straight away?
I think I like both. I think it's always the mixture of what I have on my plate and I will prepare and perform. There are sometimes pieces that have a very big range where I often experience that the people who want to then put it in the program have a hard time finding someone to be able to do it because it's not really mezzo, it's not really soprano and for me, I have a quite big range and it's even fun to sing low and then suddenly very high. And so those pieces I like, and I guess I have now the feeling that I know what pieces really match me. And then I'm also very, very excited because I know I can just jump in or shine because it's whatever my strengths are come out really well. But on the other hand, I also like to challenge myself. And there are pieces, I mean, when you do new music for a while, I mean, also the people who perform it, they have a sense or get it even more what is working and what is not working. And I also love challenging pieces. I like things where I grow, but there are pieces where I see basically on the first sight, this is difficult, but I know when I work it out, it will be amazing in the end. And then I'm really excited and love to do all the extra work, whatever I have to put into there. But sometimes there are pieces, you see, this is not gonna work in the end, however much I practice. And that I found very frustrating, to still do something and do the best with it and whatever, fulfill everybody's wishes. And sometimes I even try to talk to the composer and say, this will not be working, but not everybody is listening to that. Some are, when they are listening to it, that's, I think, a great collaboration, because then you can maybe really work out what is this about and what does it need also for the performer or the performers, the ensemble, to get there. But when I have the feeling it will work out, then I jump into the hard work.
Yes, of course, of course. What are some of the most challenging things that you have been asked to do as a singer?
What is challenging? I found microtones quite challenging. I often talked about it with other singers. And I get the feeling that it's difficult for many of us. I find that it's easier for singers who maybe have a background, whatever, in Iranian or Greek music, because there it's more, or even Indian, there it's more in the system. And I always feel I want to give it to the composers, but for me, it's hard to get it. Some composers, like when I worked with James Weeks, he really sang them for me. And when somebody sings them to me, then I can copy it and I get them too. There's some composers who work with it differently, that maybe it's a microtone that also is an overtone of a piano note or something, and then I can hit it quite well. Or once I had a composer who turned it around. He had a keyboard that was totally out of tune, but I had to go with the keyboard. And the thing is, singers, I think they like to react on what is around them, and if there is something, they can deal with it according to whatever there is. Then they could do anything. Or I had once a piece where a viola player was playing with me the weirdest microtones, and I just followed her, and then it worked out too. So, but I guess maybe some colleagues handle it better.
What is the challenge that you have with microtones? Is it not quite being it, not feeling it in your body where they are, or is it a listening?
I find them hard to feel in the body, or maybe we were so trained to hit whatever the right notes, the half and the whole notes. And it feels weird, and you really have to find the sensation. And I think to do it really well, then maybe I should only sing this kind of music, but this is not what I sing, because there's so many different things. And then I touch it, and then maybe when I feel, I'm getting better at it, then I'm at the next piece again. Yeah. And but I mean, if some people are very good at demonstrating it, it helps. But I also had a colleague, he sang a very difficult piece with a vocal ensemble, and they rehearsed it very precisely with some weird keyboards, and they were supposed to sing soft because that's what the composer wanted. But then when they put it together with the ensemble and the orchestra, they realized if this vocal ensemble sings soft, it does not get over the ensemble. So in the last rehearsals, they told the singers, please sing now louder. And suddenly all the work was gone, because they could find the microtones being used singing soft. And suddenly singing louder, it threw them off. So all the microtones were gone. They rehearsed for weeks. And sometimes I heard a singer in Berlin, she did fantastic microtones. I admire it totally. The other thing I found challenging, but at some point I actually found my way with it, was when, I mean, this is also extreme, when you have to scream on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the first times I had a wrong idea what it is, and so I guess I followed a wrong idea and it never really worked. And I don't know what really happened to me then, because there was a time I had to do screaming again, and for some reason I had a different approach, but I don't even know where it came from, and suddenly it worked. And it's not something I don't want to scream for hours, but if it shows up, I have a way with it. And there I also say, I guess you have to let go of fear, because if you're scared by things, especially something like screaming, then the chance that you really hurt yourself is very high. But on the other hand, if you look at babies, they scream for hours and they never get hoarse. So there seems to be a mechanism in the body that it is possible, but it's hard to find. But once you have it, it can be fun. And then I was screaming and then singing the nicest pianissimo sounds afterwards.
That sounds very hard. Do you, for things like that, do you physically train your body as well as musically train it?
Well, certainly, but I guess that's good for everybody. I mean, I love yoga a lot. I mean, there is quiet yoga, there is more fast yoga, and then I have, actually, I don't know if the word is the same, trampoline.
Yeah.
Jump.
Yeah.
I have this at home and I love it. And I also like going running, and I like taking walks. And I think as a singer, because I'm working with my body, I was always very aware of myself and my health. I mean, since I live, I watch that I sleep enough, that I get good food, that I get regularly food, that I get out to the air. But most singers I know are, I guess, more conscious, because it's our body. And like when I don't sleep enough, I feel that everything in my throat is very dry. And then I can sing, but it's much, much harder. So yeah. I don't want to be there. So I see that I sleep enough. And I get, for me, also singers are like sports people, like professional sports people. And body is part of it.
Yes. And if you break a string on your violin, you can repair that. But with a voice, obviously you you just have to wait and heal. And in your free time, let's say, when you're not thinking about actually working, what music do you like to listen to?
That's a very great question. And it brings me back to an observation I did when I was studying music. I think there are two kinds of musicians. There's this one kind who prepares and practices, and they listen to whatever, 6 CDs a day, or nowadays whatever, on some streaming platform. And then there's this other kind of musician who also practices for hours and then enjoys silence. And I guess I'm more the second kind. I still have CDs that are still in the cellophane. I haven't opened it, even though I want to listen to it, but I also enjoy then silence. Or, I mean, now we're in my podcast, what I also like listening to a lot, actually, are podcasts. And I guess most podcasters also like to listen to podcasts. But that I do, you could listen to music. I listen to music sometimes in the radio when I drive a car. But the podcast I listen to, you know, when I do my cooking, cleaning, ironing, those kind of things. And I listen actually to little music. But what I really enjoy and I do a lot, is going to live concerts. I love the live experience a lot, which has been less in the last few years, months. But there I really dive then into, and then I'm not distracted or anything. I'm just there and I love seeing and feeling and the whole experience of it.
And do you like concerts that are vocal, or do you like to listen to things that are not something that you might do yourself?
I like both. I like also listening to other singers. That's also very inspiring. Or sometimes their pieces, I'm like, oh my God, I want to sing this too. And I just enjoy music. And so it's very, very different what I go to or whatever the Dorf and Cologne have to offer me and I can go to.
In Cologne, you can hear almost anything. So it's a very good place to be for that. But how do you discover new music for you to either listen to or in particular to perform? How do new pieces come your way?
I also sometimes curate my own concerts or festival like Singing Future, and then I guess already have people in mind or I know, or maybe I have sung something by them already, or I want to sing something by them, and then I can oftentimes commission also the work. And it's great for me to do. I mean, this is also the fun of contemporary music, that the composers are alive. I can be in touch with them. I can talk to them. We can sometimes develop an idea together, or one has an idea and asks the other. I mean, I can ask composers to write something for me, or I sing whatever an existing piece. And the other way around works too, that they get some job somewhere or a concert or an opera, whatever. And then they say, Irina, I want you to sing this. So I guess we are very important partners.
Yep.
Partners in crime. And sometimes I go because I really want to sing something, or maybe I've heard it somewhere and I'm like, oh, I want to do that too. Then there are obviously lots of premieres also where you sometimes don't know what you get in the end.
Yeah.
And sometimes I also work with themes that I then search through my or the existing repertory what could fit there. And then I also do the solo singing, I think, since 2010. And yep. Then I always look into that repertory, or what is there, or who could write something for me. And last year I also bought an Indian instrument, the Shruti box.
Yep.
So there already have been composers who've written for me, and now this year even more. So this just develop because I like this instrument. I like singing with it, and then I played myself, and so it's somehow hard to get to where all those ideas and corporations then actually come from. It's somehow floating.
I find it's once you've established yourself a certain amount, then things just sort of come past you. It's like being a sea creature in a coral reef, and sort of things come past and you think, oh yeah, that catches my ear. I want to find out more about that, or I want to work with this composer or this musician. And it's quite a new music, I think, is still quite a small world, so you can find out a lot about it quite quickly, I think. Is that your experience too, that you can get quite a good network across composers and across other musicians, and you can really get a good idea of what people are doing everywhere?
I think so too. I mean, I always loved people and like people, and I like to be in touch with them, and that always worked well for me. And oftentimes, I guess that's also in the artist area, that you get to know each other quite well. It's often more than just a job, and oftentimes you get to know each other, or even there's friendship, or sometimes deep friendship. And but I also must say, I've been on Facebook since 2018, rather late actually. And that through this medium, even though there are other topics about it that maybe are not so nice, but I feel more connected because I know more what everybody is doing in this world. And this I actually enjoy a lot. And for some reason, I think we got even closer, like the new music scene. And that's cool.
I think so. I think social networks like that, and even podcasts like this that present composers and musicians as kind of quote unquote normal people who who do normal things and aren't this kind of person in a we say an ivory tower locked away in just writing music but actually kind of think about politics and food and books and everything else that everybody else thinks about. I think these things, these connections have, as you say, they have drawn us a little bit closer. I wanted to ask you, so who or what has played the greatest role in shaping you and who inspires you as a singer?
Wow. I know I asked it myself, but it's a difficult question because there's, I guess, also many people, many things. And let's see what I will take out now or focus on. I just did an episode for my podcast where I talk about if we need role models, and there are actually thought about that too. And I had she was a piano teacher in Vancouver, and she mm-hmm. also taught art songs. And I was in her art song class, and her name is Rina Sharon. She's an amazing person and pianist. And I learned so much from her, as also because for me, she was so authentic and so true to herself and what she told us. And so at some point when I returned after my master's to Germany, I also wrote her, because at first it felt like, okay, I was, you know, in university and there were all those teachers, they told me what to do. And suddenly there was none. And I was like, how is this not working? What's going on here? And so I asked her. And then she also said, well, this is how life is. You have to now figure it out on your own. And this is what everybody is doing. And you also will do it well. And yeah, it still touches me. And what I also learned from her very, for me, authentic way was that I also like whatever I do, I want to be able to look at myself in the mirror, that I really feel fine with it. And that sometimes has consequences. Mm-hmm. And but I feel very, very good with that. And I also admire people or singers who do their own way, or even, I mean, I often say there are people who, I say, play the system very well, or the music system, the music world. And some are actually there to bring in new impulses and maybe change the game. And I guess with my personality, I admire more the people who change the game. And so some of the people who admire Maria Callas, she changed the whole opera world. And I like her way, her expression and her singing. And or I also admire Edita Gruborova, who has died recently, a great, great soprano. And what I admire in her, she came from Slovakia, and then she was at the Vienna State Opera House. I mean, she was very early at a very good working place, but they never gave her the roles she was really good at, or she got famous later on. And then she already had big deals contracts with Deutsche Grammophon and Decca, but they always ask her for roles where she said at some point, this is not me. And then she canceled all those contracts. I mean, at a very young age, where everybody were like, oh God, this contract. And then she started doing all this Bel Canto singing, which she got so amazing at. And then she just started her own CD edition to do what she wanted to do. And so those are people I admire a lot, when they just do what they're really themselves.
How do you find that authenticity as an artist then?
Yes, I said, I always want to be able to look into the mirror and feel good and not whatever, be ashamed of myself. And maybe that's not always easy, or maybe sometimes I do things that not everybody likes. But if it's aligned with me, then it feels good. Yeah, it's this balance. I mean, on one hand, I live from singing. I live from my music, and I also want to live from this. And it's my biggest dream or fulfillment to be a singer and be able to have enough money. I guess I'm quite lucky that many, many things really fit to me. When it doesn't fit, I cannot do it. Sometimes my voice is then really like screaming no, and there's no way I can do it. Maybe there's sometimes things in between that I tried out, and sometimes it's a good experience, I can continue. But when something really doesn't work out for me, also on a personal human level, then I do not repeat this experience. I do it once. I could do everything so far. I never had to quit or stop a project or get out of it. But when something is not working for me, then it's a one-time thing for me. But I guess, yeah, that's the hardest thing for all of us. And I also think it's a process. I get to know myself better, and then I maybe know more what fits to me, or what people, what persons, what colleagues. But on the other hand, I realize now also with the podcast, I mean, people get to know me quite well. I'm quite open about things. And the good thing is that it draws the right people to me, because they know me. They know exactly who I am, what I stand for. And then they say, I really want to work with her. And there are maybe then also no surprises anymore, because I'm in some way like an open book. And that's also great. I mean, that I guess there's for everybody matching people, but not everybody has to match me. And so to find the right tribe, I say, who you work with, and where you really, I guess, when you find the right surroundings, then you can do also your work at your best and really shine. And this is fantastic when it happens, and that's something I wish every artist to have.
Yes, of course. You talked about a process in terms of learning about yourself and about the music that suits you and suits your voice. Have you had experiences where you've done something and it has actually changed who you thought you were, or what you thought your voice was, and it's actually changed that sense of identity and authenticity?
I mean, the one thing I like in singing contemporary music is that I can do so many styles and aesthetics, and that also fits my personality. So I enjoy jumping in all of that. So there is Irene in it, but I guess I learn something new with every new piece, especially with contemporary music. And what did you ask me?
I guess, do you have a fixed sense of what is authentic to you, or does that evolve over time? And then are there any particular experiences that you can say have made that evolution happen?
I guess if I just talk about singing, there I'm more, I like to live and sing the different aspects, and I like to discover myself new. So I guess there my authenticity is that I jump into anything, and maybe there is no setup in a way. There I'm very, very, very open. But I guess in how I deal with people, how I work in projects, that I like when it's an open, honest conversation, and where there is also trust. Those are the things I may be more fixed, because when I have the feeling, and I haven't had it often, but I didn't like this experience when maybe the composer didn't trust himself and then he tried to load this onto me, that's not a nice experience. That's his topic and not mine. And that's something I had to learn, because as a young singer, so I didn't get it, but I only felt, well, something feels weird, it doesn't feel good. And then I also have the feeling I cannot really give my best. And I guess in those things, like maybe it's more than the values or how we cooperate and interact there. I mean, that can also change, but I guess there I have more my values. But with the music itself, I'm very, very open. And
So it's to do with if it's a piece of music that you feel that you can engage openly with and productively, you know, if you put yourself into it, it's going to give something back to you and be worthwhile.
Certainly. I mean, I learn also something new, and it's often that maybe I learn something in one piece and I can then use this knowledge or ability in another piece. And then I'm like, oh, cool. And so somehow they're always connected in a way which I just do. I don't think about.
Yeah. And your experience and your body and everything becomes kind of the path of those connections between things. Yeah. You talked a little bit earlier about some kind of lifestyle habits that are useful to you as a singer, looking after yourself and eating well and so on. But are there any objects that are particularly important to your work that you can't do your work without? So I always have a notebook with me. If my laptop dies, that's the worst possible thing that can happen. I have my library of books. This is what makes my work. But are there particular objects for you as a singer that are absolutely essential?
I guess for me, because I actually also learned playing the piano quite well. I mean, I'm not a pianist, but for a singer, I played like 13 years. So I have a piano, and when I prepare my music, I come from the piano. And also when it's pieces with ensemble, I can kind of play everything or know what surroundings I'm in. So that is very important to me. And I also have a a small piano that sounds kind of nice, but I can fit it in most of my also small suitcases. Mm-hmm. That travels with me a lot. Or even when I did the recordings, the CD recordings with solo repertory, then I also would use this as a reference or the for the pitching. And it also helped the sound engineer, because I think the first solo CD I did with a tuning fork, but then I had the pitch, but he didn't have it.
Yeah.
And so when I would play this thing from my little piano, then we all could relate to the same pitch. And so since then, I always take this little piano with me also in those solo recording sessions. That's important to me. Well, I have lots of scores. I could probably also start an own library for that. And at some point, I brought in some order, because at first, I just had piles of music, and in some way they all looked the same. And then I was always searching. And I think 3 years ago I said, okay, I have to go through it once, bring it in order. And it took me a few days, but now it's easier. I mean, the scores are important. I guess like computer, laptop and so on is also important to communicate,
yeah,
with the word. Or I mean, also lots of people who organize concerts, they write emails nowadays, and so this is, yeah, to get organized, very important. Yeah, I also love reading books, but I have also many books, and I'm also in that way old-fashioned and analog. I only read real books. I have no Kindle or whatsoever. I don't like reading on the screen a lot. I like having paper.
I agree with you. I agree with you about that. Sometimes I have experiences. I mean, I do have a Kindle and I read from it sometimes, because someone will say, oh, can you write a program note about this Ravel piece? And I think, I haven't got any Ravel books here, but I can buy one straight away and I can have it instantly. So it's useful for that. But I don't enjoy reading for a long time from the screen. I just want to ask you to sort of finish things off, to ask a few questions that I'm borrowing from you. One in particular I always find really interesting is what is your approach to time management, and do you have any advice? You do a lot of different things now, so how do you manage your time?
Yeah, I like this question a lot. I'm always curious what people tell me. And also that I find sometimes it's changing. It's also a process, and probably where I stand in life or you stand in life. And actually, when I started the podcast in 2018, I was so clear that I know exactly what it is. And I must say, I can be also very structured and disciplined. So for me, whatever they are on hacks on time management, they work for me. Mm. But I also learned that this doesn't work for everybody, because some people are just different. And in Germany, there is a person who then wrote a book, something about the chaotic, some funny title, where she actually helped more the people who don't want this structured thing. And so I'm now very, very open, and I'm always curious what people answer, because it's very different. And then I actually did a whole episode on time management. And when I did that, it was after a while I did the podcast. And before the podcasting, I had my time management. And after podcasting, it suddenly turned around, because I'm like, what do I put in this work for, you know, doing this editing, loading it up and blah, blah, blah. And it kind of screwed my former time management. So I had to learn it again and set it up again. And I do different things, but it also helps me then to have a focus or say, okay, this afternoon I just do podcast. And then that's the good thing. I can upload them in advance. And I do it a lot because with my singing career, there are times I cannot do podcasts. So then maybe they're 3 months ahead and then I have lots of concerts. And so I use the time wisely. And so I do more this benching thing that I really say, okay, this is not podcast. And then I do whatever curator program. Yeah. But things like singing, I mean, as I said, we're like sports people. I do every day in the morning. I get up, I do my trampoline, I do my yoga, I meditate, and then I go straight to the piano and sing. And then I know, then I can, you know, look, whoever wrote me emails or wants something from me, then I feel I've done the most important thing. And the most important thing for me is that my voice is doing well and that I learn all this difficult repertory. And then it gets more fluid. I mean, it depends if there are rehearsals or if, like today, we have this lovely interview, whatever shows up. And sometimes I think tomorrow will be a day because I have to actually program lots of things. I need some time where I really have the capacity to think for a while and not be disturbed. I also have a few students. Yeah. And yeah, it's a mixture of things. But I guess when I really have to, and I'm pretty good at that, I can focus quite well. So when then I say, okay, I have to do this task now, then I do it and then have no distraction, no mobile phone or whatever there is. I don't have pop-up signs or anything. I don't do that. And then I'm sometimes also surprised that when I really focus, and even though maybe in the beginning we're like, oh, I don't want to do this, but then I do it and then I get it done. And then I also have time to maybe take a walk. So sometimes it's also the extremes now in my life that are really dive in deep, get it done. But then I also have leisure time. And but it's also fluid. I don't know what I would answer in maybe a year. I mean, also this whole pandemic situation also changed things. I mean,
what is time anymore?
I mean, in the beginning we had lots of time and I was meditating more and I was taking my walks with my friends and didn't know what would come. And what still is happening, that all the people who hire me, since the pandemic, they would do it oftentimes much more on shorter notice. So also last year in January, my calendar didn't look very good. I thought like, okay. And then it was a very packed year in the end. And this year is so medium, but I'm like, okay. And there are things showing up because people plan differently. And I think we, at this point, as long as this thing is going on, we have to be very flexible.
Yeah, I feel the same thing from writing notes about concerts. It's suddenly, okay, we're now doing this thing in 2 weeks' time. Can you write? And whereas before, everything could be planned and you would know what was happening in 6 months. That's changed a lot. I find it very important to protect evenings and weekends and make sure that the work stops at 6 o'clock on a Friday and it doesn't go over into you know, family time. Do you do a similar thing, or do you just let it spill over and work flexibly all the time? I mean, I guess for a singer, it's different because you have concerts and rehearsals and so on, but.
Yeah, like the practicing my voice, I basically do every day, on weekdays, on weekends, whatever. And I actually don't go so late at evening or at night. There I also like then to relax. But I guess one of my best times is in the mornings. And so I do usually the very challenging tasks in the morning. Then I feel already good when I take my lunch break and then see what shows up. And I also I find it very important to have time with my family or my friends, and I also take that time. I'm not a night person that I would ever work until 3 o'clock or something. As I said, I like my sleep.
Yep.
And sometimes on the weekends I do things, but then maybe just one task, because sometimes I also like when it's spread out, but then I can also whatever have free time during the week. And the one thing I also learned, and that fits also to the theme time management, is I think in some theory they call it the 10,000 mile method. And
yeah,
it's this picture, whatever, if you would walk from the east to the west coast of the United States, that it's better to whatever walk, I don't know, 10 miles a day, but every day the same. And not say, oh, I'm feeling so good today, I do 20 miles, but on the next day you're so exhausted that you don't walk at all. And that's also something I got more a feeling with, that I say, even though now I maybe would have the energy to do more, but if I have the feeling I've really done all my tasks, then I also go then into leisure and say no. Then I have energy on the next day, because I also had this experience that I would then go on, yeah, I'm so good and flow, da 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 da. And on the next day, I was like hardly getting out of bed. So for me, that can also be different for other people. It's better to have like a similar workload every day.
Absolutely. It took me a very long time to learn that. And you'd think, oh, you know, you'd say, okay, I want to write 1,000 words today. And you'd write 1,000 words and it'd be only 11 o'clock and you think, oh, I can keep going. And then the next day you're exhausted and you don't know what to do. Whereas if you say, okay, I will stop when I get to 1,000 words, and then tomorrow I can carry on. And so you know what you can get up in the morning and you know what the job is. Whereas if you've got to spend 2 or 3 hours in the morning figuring out what you need to do next, it's a waste. So yeah, I took me a long time to learn that, but I think that's really good advice. Keep it, stop when you've done what you meant to do. Mm-hmm. And save it for the next day. I wanted to ask you also, really, what drives you forward as an artist? Do you have a vision of what you want to be, or where you want to get to?
Well, the first is that I really love singing, and I guess this singing is really the main part of me, of my life. That's the center. And yeah, doing pieces that fit me or that challenge me, and that the right pieces come along. But what I also thrive for is, and this is also why I'm doing this podcast, that I find there's so many interesting human beings in our music scene, and I want to get to know them more. I want to the whole thing. I mean, with success, with failure, with whatever. And I found there is still, I don't know how it is in Great Britain, there's still so little. I mean, there are lots of biographies about whatever, Anna Netrebko and so on, but there is, hardly none about people from the new music scene. I mean, there is one singer in Germany. She is dead already, Carla Henius, and there's a great letter response with Luigi Nono. Mm-hmm. And she is there on some points, very, very honest, very human, where I really was like, oh, cool that she's writing that. She also wrote when somebody else would then sing Il Fabbrica Illuminato, she was really jealous. And she also wrote that to Nono. And I'm like, wow, she's so honest about it. That's a situation we all had to go through at some point, but nobody talks about it. And I guess that's something that pushes me, or I really find that I wish we show ourselves more, and that it's not just some clean, shiny picture, because we're human beings. And I guess maybe in the visual arts or in some other areas, they're more open. But I find in the classical music and also in our scene, yeah, we are so great and beautiful, and I mean, we're also great and beautiful, but we also have other sides. And yeah, I wish we can talk about that more and break taboos. And I think it's maybe also for our possible audience even more interesting to get to know us and not just see, okay, there is somebody performing a piece greatly, because also through my podcast, there are people now going to music who haven't done before, and they do it because they say, well, the persons are really interesting. And then they open up also to music that maybe is weird for them at first. And those things that, we are authentic. We do our thing. We can shine. We can show ourselves. I also wish that we all get the value back, or also get good money for our engagements. Those are things that excite me, and I hope that there is great things happening in our music world. So it's the singing, but it's much more also around it for me.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting that you say that you don't feel there's very much of that in Germany, of that sort of biography, because in the UK, I think to some extent, we look to Germany and think, oh, they've got lots about new music, because in comparison, I think here, it's a very, very minority thing. And visual arts in the UK are very strong, and obviously literature and theatre are very strong. So you open a newspaper, there'll always be articles about these things. But to read something about a contemporary composer is relatively rare. And all sorts of complicated reasons why that is. But it's nice to be able to sort of see people and see kind of the humanity behind them as well as their work.
Like in Germany, I mean, we have lots of books about composers, yes, and maybe also some who are dead already, but there are not so many books about living composers who are living right now. They're not there yet. And I find there are very few books about performers,
yes,
who do contemporary music. And there I wish should happen much, much more. I mean, there are pianists, there are singers, they have experienced great things. I think we have lots of fun anecdotes, and also books where people really show themselves. I mean, we also have biographies, especially singer biographies. I mean, I read them all my life long since I'm 13 or so. And some are just like, telling how great this person is. I mean, it's fun, but it's not really interesting. It's interesting when you get the whole story and what maybe also was challenging or hard. And so I wish there much, much more, that there will be a biography about whatever, Juliet Fraser and or Anton Lugakovsky and whatever. I mean, they have something to say, I think.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. Do you have any projects or ideas that you want to realize, but that you haven't been able to do yet? Like a sort of dream project that you'd like to do?
Well, some dream projects already realized. As I mentioned before, the Shuruti box is something that is being with me right now. And if there are people who would like to compose something, they can contact me. And actually would love to sing Berio folk songs, or if somebody wants to do that. I haven't done them yet, but they're on my wish list. I guess there are also many things, and I also like projects where you really explore something on a deep level that, yeah, the composers, the performers, whoever is involved, or the director can go there. But it's not that I have now a specific theme or topic, but yeah, that's also the way how you approach things can be.
You've performed in quite a few unusual spaces, sort of subway stations and things. Are there any spaces like that that you think you would like to bring your music into?
No, right now I don't have an idea, even though I loved playing this stuff in the subway in Düsseldorf. And but I'm open if someone has a great idea, they can.
Of course. Of course.
Well, actually, I've been singing lately. That was also fun. Oh God, I don't know the English word. It's going in the air like a little cable car, I think.
Yeah, cable car, like for skiing.
You're up in the air. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was singing in that, and there were only like two or three people with me, also because of Corona. And so they would go with me up, and then other people would get in and go with me down again. And that was kind of cute too, because we were all looking around, and then it was a little bit bumpy. And that was an interesting experience.
Well, if people have ideas, then your address is in the show notes, so
yes,
they can contact you. Finally, I wanted to ask you, this is a question that you often end with as well, but what piece of advice would you give to young artists?
What piece of advice would I give?
Yeah.
Believe in yourself, and believe that how you are and what talents you got as a person and as an artist, that you're just meant to be like this. You're correct. Everything is cool. Everything is right. There is no mistake or something where you should feel you or whatever, not this and that good enough. You're just meant like that. And believe in yourself. It's really, really okay. And when you believe in yourself and you are an artist, also dream big. There is a lot possible. And dare something and dream big.
That's beautiful advice. Thank you, Ravena. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for leading this great interview with me.
It's been a pleasure.
This was the wonderful interview with Tim Rutherford Johnson. And I'm so happy that he took the time to interview me today for this anniversary episode. And I cannot believe that I'm actually doing this podcast now for 4 years. Well, this has been a long time, quite some episodes. And if you're curious, please listen to some of the other episodes. There are great episodes also in English. And well, if you're able to speak and understand German, then you could also listen to the German episodes. I thank you so much that you tuned in with me today. And I really hope that you liked it. And I love it if you could tell your friends and colleagues about my podcast. Thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene. Thank you.